Finals are probably coming up. Thank you for taking time to come and join us and worship with us. Be in prayer for these youngsters. Finals are no fun. And I don't like to give them either. How many of you today, as you sit here with us, are prodigals? Come on. Yes. Yep. There ought to be more hands. Yeah, very good. You notice that in Luke 15, when we get into the prodigal son, that the word is never used. Jesus never uses that word. The word prodigal means extravagant spender, recklessly spending money and maybe spending all of it. How many of you have ever recklessly or extravagantly spent money? Yeah, see, it's a little bit better now. I will confess to you, I am a prodigal. When it comes to my grandsons and granddaughters, I can spend pretty extravagantly, even recklessly. But Jesus never uses that term in Luke 15. This is the parable of actually two lost sons, a continuation of where we were last week. Remember, we started out in verse 1, and we said, now the tax collectors and the sinners were all gathered around to hear him, to hear Jesus. You know, Jesus, if you look in the scriptures, and I just want to make a couple points here before we get going. If you look in the scriptures, Jesus never condemns the culture he is in. Now think of that. Be mindful of that. Jesus never condemns the culture when he is around tax collectors and sinners. He doesn't condemn them or what they're doing. He sits with them and talks with them and he eats with them and he teaches them. And one of the best things he teaches them is his love. The Pharisees had a problem with that and they called him on it several times. This isn't the first time and this isn't the only time that the Pharisees will question Jesus' righteousness because he's eating with sinners who are not righteous. They have all kinds of names for Jesus, winebibber, glutton, you name it. All because he's eating with unrighteous people. But it doesn't seem to bother him. So this parable of two lost sons, the younger son represents all the people Jesus eats with. The older son represents the Pharisees. This story, this parable is actually directed to them. So on the small scale, Jesus is trying to get a point across to these Pharisees. On a larger scale, this parable is the gospel. Sort of brought down into one chapter. Jesus seems to like to do that too. When he was asked, what's the most important commandment? He boils down the entire Torah, all the teachings of God, into you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. And hear, O Israel, only God is God. It sure makes it easier on me because I don't have to go and learn all of Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Because our love should cover everything. Because God's love does. So he takes this parable and boils down the entire book, the gospel of God, into one parable. And it goes like this. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." We're going to break this down a little bit as we go along. Now think of this. This young man lives in a village, in a community. This community has certain standards, rules, and regulations, culturally if not written. This whole culture was based on honor. Honor your father and your mother. They didn't take that lightly. Some people today think that that commandment says, humor your father and mother. That's not what it says. When this young man said, "Dad, I want my inheritance. I want what you owe me now." I can't imagine going to my father and doing that. So it would be like me going to my father and saying, "Dad, I want whatever you've got written out in the will for me after you die, I want it now." So it's like saying, "Dad, die." You did not do that in this culture. That totally dishonored this man. Matter of fact, all the actions that this man takes, this father, all his actions bring dishonor upon him. And the village is standing around waiting to see what he's going to do. This is a village. They had it on Facebook. It was posted. Did you hear what the young son did? He asked his dad for his inheritance. It scared the village out of their wits. Because all the moms and dads in that village were going around saying, "We got to watch this, because if our son does this, we can't have that. We expect this father to make an example of this son." And if you look back in God's Torah, a son this rebellious could have been stoned. So the father says, "No, you can't have it, and get out." Oh, sorry. So he divided his property between them, between the two sons. In Jesus' day, most of this property was in land. For a Jewish boy, land was everything. You belonged to the land. If I quote something from Oklahoma, you belong to the land. The land belonged to you. You and the land were one. It was your inheritance. It was your life. It was your birthright. If you had to divide all your possessions up, that meant that somebody had to sell some property. This was going to diminish this man's standing in his community. And when you went out and bargained for land, the honorable thing to do was to take a lot of time. You went out together, you walked the land, you looked it all over. My father-in-law could tell me every swale, rise, bump in his fields, and he would warn me about them. He said, "Don't drop the plow here. Drop it a little further out, because if you drop it there, you'll get stuck." So I dropped it there. And I got stuck. So you were supposed to barter back and forth. You were supposed to negotiate to sell the land. But it was done quickly. Not long after that, the younger son got all the things together that he had, and he set off for a distant country. And there he squandered his wealth in wild living. He separated himself from his village, from his family. His actions did that. But then he did it physically. The life groups that Todd speaks of, that we are moving toward, this church, this village, this community, it is a life support system. This young man destroyed that. Villages, communities, churches, congregations support one another. And he gave all that up and took the money, went to a far-off land. And then he spent it all on wine, women, and song. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need, but there was no one there to help him. He had separated himself from his support group. So he went out and hired himself to a citizen of that country who knew he was a Jew. Now think of this. This man was a stranger in a foreign land. He hired himself out to a man who knew he was a Jew, a man who really didn't want to help him all that much, and said, "Go and feed pigs." Are you kidding me? He mocked the boy. "Go and feed the pigs. Maybe I can get rid of you that way." So he went out. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. This young man represents a lot of people that you and I will run into. It represents us, where we have rebelled against God, against His teachings, against His standards, and we've separated ourselves from His community. We're out with the pigs, about as low as a Jewish boy could go, and the support was gone. In verse 17 it says, "When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death?'" So he starts to plan. He has hit rock bottom, and he starts to plan. "I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father. When you dishonor your father, and you break ties with your community, and "I'm sorry" just won't do it for this culture. You had to make restitution. So, he doesn't want to go back and be a servant, because a servant in that household would have been taken care of, lived on property, and so forth. He wants to go back and be a hired man, earn a wage, and pay off his debt, which probably could not have been done given the prevailing wages of that time. But this young man exhibits something that we all might want to keep in mind. That's home. Home. He wanted to go home. He was an exile. His actions had created a barrier between everyone he thought he loved. I don't think he loved his father. He just wanted what his father had. He wanted property and money. And he found that going his own way, putting himself on the throne of his life, had taken him into an exiled land. The thought of home is a mighty powerful influence because it impacts all of our souls. We are not home. We are exiles in a foreign land. God did not create us to live here like this. God created us for a garden. There's not supposed to be war and famine. There's not supposed to be cancer and pain. That's not the life God had planned for us. We long for the garden. We long for the home. And until that most perfect home is provided for us, until Jesus calls us, this is our village. This is our home. We are family. We are the support system that this young man missed. We are the support system that all the young sons around us need and just don't know it yet. So the son goes home. While he is still a long way off, his father saw him. Now, there's probably several things going on here. I would imagine that once that boy left, there were certain times during the day, and at least one time in the evening, that Dad went out on the back porch and looked down the lane and down the road for that familiar gait, the stride, the walk. He went out there and he looked. Is he there? Is he coming? Night after night after night. When the boy finally shows up, the kids of the village are out playing, and they see him. He's back. And they let everybody in the village know. He's back. And they all come running out. They want to see how Father is going to react to this boy coming home. And even the young boy doesn't know what's going to happen. He's broken all ties with his family and with the village. They are a hopping mad at him, at least the village. So they're all waiting in suspense. They're watching. What's Dad going to do? While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. And he ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to the father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. And the father cut him off. Stopped him. He ran to his son. Some people call this the day God ran. Men of his age, living in a Middle Eastern culture, did not pull their robes up and tuck them in and run. Men of my age don't run. Well, I did this morning. There was this cat. He gets into his apology. He gets into his plan, and his dad says, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him. Bring the ring and put it on his finger. Put sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And so the celebration began. Who do you think owned the robe that went around the son? It was Dad's, because it was the best robe in the house. Where do you think the sandals came from? They were Dad's. The ring. This father publicly restores his son to the highest position that son can hold. No longer a servant. He's not going to be a hired man. You're not going to work this off, boy. You owe me nothing. Bring it all. Everything I have. Bring it out here and put it on him. He is my son. He's not dead anymore. He's alive. Let's party. My friends, every Sunday, here on Sunday morning, it's to be a party. It's a celebration of all the young sons represented here, and young ladies, represented here today, who have come back home. And God has said, let's celebrate. Let's join together. Let's dance. Let's kill the fatted calf. So they do it. Now this is a big celebration. This village has undergone a famine. And he has the whole village in to celebrate. They've killed the fatted calf. You don't do that. Just for any reason. Most meals in the Middle East didn't have a lot of meat. This was special. So they're raising a ruckus. Everybody's happy. Everyone's celebrating. Except. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. He's working. That's all he'd ever known. Now, let's be a little sympathetic to the old son. Older sons in Middle Eastern culture had a lot of responsibility. The farm, the land, the chores, the animals, they were all his to do or make sure that they got done. Care of dad was in his hands at this point. This young man had a lot of responsibility. He was out carrying out his responsibility. He was doing what he was supposed to do. He protects the family honor. He protects the family name. He's busy. He heard, he came near the house, heard the music and the dancing. He called one of the servants and said, "What is going on?" "Your brother has come home," he replied. "Your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. "Oh, are you kidding me?" So, his father went out and pleaded with him. You didn't leave a party and go out and plead with your oldest son to come in. It wasn't the youngest son that dishonored him now. It was the older boy. Look, he didn't even call him by an esteemed name. "Look, you, all these years I've been slaving for you. I've never disobeyed your orders, yet you never even gave me a goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes home, who squandered your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him. I have slaved my entire life. I have worked for you. I've never disobeyed you once. And you've never even given me a goat. You owe me. You should have consulted with me. This costs money. What were you thinking?" You see, the older son didn't love his dad either. All the older son was doing was obeying, jumping through the hoops, just so he could get control of what dad had. When things didn't go the son's way, he got angry. His expectations weren't being met. He got self-righteous. I've never disobeyed God much. I pay my tithe. I teach a Sunday school class. I go to church at least twice a month. I'm just into the millennials. God, you owe me. I shouldn't have to go through tough times. There was a day when I was that older son. When I've done all these things and things didn't work out right. And I got angry. The question for older sons is, and always will be, why do we serve God? Is it because we want to control him? Tell him what to do? You see, we're just like the younger son. We don't love God for what God is. We serve him because he's our life insurance policy. He's our fire insurance policy. God wants to be more than that in our lives. There are times today when I think the Church of the United States, or the Church of Jesus Christ in the United States today, is dying because there are too many elder brothers in the church. And they've driven out the younger brothers. Maybe this young kid left because of the older brother, just couldn't stand being told all the time that he was wrong, that his culture was wrong, his friends are wrong, what he does is wrong, 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 everything's wrong. I think I'd leave too. The father says, son, actually, he says, my child. Everything I have is yours. And all you want is a goat? You were always with me. We had to celebrate and be glad because your brother, this brother of yours, not just my son, was dead and now he's alive. Was lost and now he's found. And Jesus left it there. Wow. Jesus was asking the Pharisees to come home and come in and party. Asking the very men who eventually would turn him over to be crucified. He left the response in their hands. We don't know if the elder brother ever went in. Jesus left something else out of this story. In the first two parables, something is lost, a sheep or a coin. In the first two parables, a shepherd goes and he searches for the sheep. In the second parable, the old woman searched for the coin. In this parable, no one goes to search for the young son. It was the responsibility of the elder brother. The elder brother should have said, Dad, I'll go and find him. I'll bear the cost. Whatever it costs, I'll find him. But this younger brother, this older brother, he could not forgive. He couldn't forgive the boy and he couldn't forgive his dad. You see, when the father brought the son back in and restored him to sonship, he made that son an heir once more. When he divided the property the first time, one-third went to the younger boy and two-thirds went to the older boy. Now that he has restored that son, his forgiveness costs the older boy, because now that younger son gets one-third of what's left. The older boy's thoughts were so tied up in property, so tied up in what he was having, what he could get, he couldn't forgive. You see, forgiveness always costs the person doing the forgiving. That's why it's called grace. We have a true older brother. We have a true older brother who paid every expense to get us home. Forgiveness is not free. Restoration into the family of God bears a price. It always comes at the cost of the one who forgives. Jesus is our true elder brother. Jesus did not only go to a foreign country to find us, to seek us, and to save us. He gave up his robes, his sandals, and his rings, and he went to the cross. Paying the expense for our restoration. Paying the cost. There's no other way to bring us home. So the question today, the question we all have to answer as we move forward, because all of this is about our heart condition. When Jesus looked upon the taxpayers, tax collectors and the sinners, he did not condemn what they were doing. He looked at their hearts and he tried to heal them. That was the younger brothers. When he looked at the older brothers, he looked at their hearts and he tried to heal them, even though they were wanting to kill him. So the question today for you and I, why do we obey? Why do we obey God? Why do we carry out his teachings? Why do we live according to Matthew 5 through 7? Is it because of what we can get out of God? Is it so we can control him and tell him what to do? Is it so we can manipulate him? I'll do this so God does that. Or do we love God and that covers it? You see, for us, it's a heart condition as well. So when you run into the younger brothers this week, and you will, are we going to be the older brother who judges and condemns, drives them away? Or are we going to be representatives of the true elder brother? Are we going to love them into the kingdom? That is our choice. Good choice, bad choice, our choice. So, will we come home and will we celebrate? Stand with me. Let it sink in. Think about it. Remember, Jesus taught these parables to change people's hearts. He doesn't condemn us. He wants to heal us up. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His countenance to shine upon you and give you His shalom all through this week ahead. Amen.